Save big money right now at Menards. From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Kit of Home Safety products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors are perfect for your living spaces, offering protection and peace of mind. Save big money on all Kit of products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
The following Packers Green 19 podcast is a production of JS Online and Packers News. And now, here are your hosts, Jim Ozarski and Tom Silverstein.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome into the latest Green 19 podcast. I am Jim Ozarski, along with Tom Silverstein of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Following up a 34-17 Green Bay Packers victory over the San Francisco 49ers Thursday night out on the West Coast, Packers moved to 6-2, 49ers 4-5. Just to recap for folks, I mean, it was a crazy week. We ended up not speaking with you this week because of how hectic it was, beginning with A.J. Dillon's positive COVID-19 test before he played against the Vikings, and then the resulting Jamal Williams and Kamal Martin being sent to COVID-19 reserve as close contacts. So we were wondering if the game would be played on the Packers' end. And then Wednesday, Brandon Ayuk and Trent Williams were also sent to the reserve COVID list because Kendrick Bourne tested positive for the already severely depleted San Francisco 49ers. And Tom, I can't help but start there. I thought for sure, honestly, like once the Packers tested positive, they would move this game off of Thursday night. They had a window. Neither team would have been affected by moving this game to Sunday or even Monday if they had to. And it would not have created the domino of changing other schedules. It was sort of a unicorn schedule wise for the league, and they elected not to take advantage of it. And I think we saw, I mean, the Packers put up 34 points, but I don't know if we really saw great football or maybe even safe football, would you say?
No, it wasn't very good. Thursday night football is bad anyways. And, you know, you just put a team that is already devastated by injury, and then 2 days before the game or day before the game finds out that it's going to lose, you know, four guys to COVID. I mean, why would you play this game now other than, you know, they figure that they make money on Thursday night, you know, that it's a lone, no competition type of situation. And I just thought that was not fair to the 49ers and not fair to a lot of fans who wanted a good game, because it wasn't that good of a game. I mean, the Packers won easily and did some nice things, but it's always going to be with the caveat that they were playing a team that, you know, needed to borrow players from somewhere to in order to field a team.
Yeah, it was I had tweeted this out, Tom, where I said I couldn't remember a team that only had three inactives, and someone pointed out that the Packers were in that situation in week 6, and I said, well, that's not really the same. The 49ers had three inactives because they only had 51 players to pick from. Yeah. They were so
well, and the Packers had purposely not filled some
right
spots on their roster.
Exactly. And I guess so, Tom, real quick, people may not understand this, because again, we'll get to the game here quickly, but there's still a chance tomorrow Packers and 49ers players test positive for COVID. The league kind of changed some of its policies because of A.J. Dillon and Baltimore Marlon Humphrey's positive tests. Fans would have noticed on the benches, everyone's wearing masks. Devontae Adams catches a touchdown. He's got a disposable mask on. So they want to they change things because of Sunday, but it just seemed you're right, Tom. I mean, I don't know if after the election stuff, they thought football could really, really do a great number regardless of who plays. And that must just be it, Tom. I thought there was a competitive disadvantage to a degree, but I don't, you heard those things in baseball, I guess, for COVID, but you didn't, that has yet to really matter for the National Football League.
Yeah. They have their own way of doing things, and they basically feel that they'll do whatever is in their best interest, and that's that. And so you get the kind of game that you got. I mean, you had a quarterback that wasn't ready to play and a team with no wide receivers whatsoever, and backup left tackle that isn't ready to play, and it just goes on and on and on. And so, you know, then the Packers have to take this game with a grain of salt to some degree, because, you know, if they think that this was a huge win, it wasn't. It was just they beat a really bad team.
Well, I'm glad you brought up some of the defensive, advantages the Packers had. And that's, look, I realize how this is going to come off as I say it, but it's true. This Packers defense needed Nick Mullins. They needed a backup left tackle who has played 18 snaps this year. They needed a 5'9" number one wide receiver who not only had an ankle injury these last few days, but had played all of 33 snaps this season. Richie James hadn't played. And the reason I say that is because I thought early on, Tom, that, look, if Craycraft catches the ball at 7'7", and guess what? They're actually moving down the field. They're at the Packers 40, second and seven. They run for first down, and guess what? James gets called for a hold. They move it back. What happens then? The left tackle gets beat by Preston Smith, the only time we've seen him win a one-on-one this year, and it gets a turnover. And now it's 14-3, and the game's basically over. Now, on one hand, in order for that to even remain competitive, the 49ers had to be perfect, Tom. Mm-hmm. But the only way that worked was because they weren't, and those were not really good players. So I think the Packers defense has to – look, they made the plays. They won the game. They took advantage of 2nd-and-16, 3rd-and-16. Raven Green caught the ball. But I think you're right. They kind of needed this get-well game. They kind of needed San Francisco to not be able to do what they normally do.
Yeah. Yep. I just think that there's not much to take from it. I didn't think they did anything great. Most of their pass rush, I don't think anyone was really beating Mike McGlinchey on the other side, who's a really good offensive lineman. And they just took advantage of the weaknesses. Well, okay, that, you know, you say, well, that's what they're supposed to do. And, you know, you take any win you can, and that's true. But I don't think we can use this and say the Packers have caught up with the 49ers, not by any stretch of the imagination. We won't know that until they play a 49ers team that's as talented as the one of last year, and it isn't right now.
Yeah, and obviously the Packers did get into their, you know, the game that works for them defensively. You know, the 49ers ran for only 55 yards, but as we outlined it there, you know, they were up 21-3 pretty quickly there in the second quarter, Tom. And then, I mean, that's how the Packers play good run defense, quite frankly, is when they play in concert with the offense and can play from ahead and have the other team throw the ball. I do want to ask you this before we flip to the offense here. You know, Jaire Alexander went out, I think it was the second play of the second quarter, helmet to helmet hit with Jerick McKinnon. He pulled himself out. He knew something happened to him on that hit, and he was out for the game with a concussion. So that meant Josh Jackson and Richie James, again, he 9 catches, 100 something yards. They picked on Josh Jackson a little bit, Tom. I know there was some blown coverages. I know late in the game, I think Stanford Samuels, Kadal Holman, you know, they were trying to get some of these young guys snaps, but what did, were there any concern there? Chris Barnes didn't finish yet another game. This time it was a calf issue. So who knows how that's going to go. I don't know. What were your thoughts? Any underlying concern at all, or is it just kind of a blah and you'll have to, because it was Thursday, you just kind of, you reset it against Jacksonville.
Well, Barnes keeps getting hurt. And this was a calf, I think, right?
Yes.
And he had been dealing with a shoulder injury. Wagner aggravated his knee injury. Aaron Jones came out of it fine, it appears. But yeah, they got banged up a little bit. Alexander's the most concerning. You never know how long those concussions are going to keep you out, but it didn't look like they suffered anything that was long term. So they're going to need all, you know, 4 days rest or whatever he gives them to get their legs back and be ready to take on Jacksonville.
Yeah, it feels like Monday, whatever Monday's going to be for them is not going to be much. You would think this team would behoove them to get back to work next Wednesday. You almost sounds strange to say, but I think it was 19 on the injury report, Tom. That's even before COVID. Yeah. And honestly, we cannot assume that AJ Dillon is going to come back from this just feeling great. Because if he does have it, if he's symptomatic, we don't know how long that will take, and how that affects him. Tom, you and I thought that Jay Sternberger, quite frankly, didn't look right for a long time, you know, after his bout with it back in August, even.
Yeah, there's no telling how it affects guys. I think it affects everybody differently. And some people get really sick or just aren't right. So I don't know. We'll have to see. If he's asymptomatic and wasn't feeling bad, he could be back to practice by next week. But you just don't know with COVID. It's almost like it's harder to judge than a football injury.
For sure. And well, what we can judge a little bit in a football injury was Aaron Jones. Olivia Reiner and I talked about this during the week, Tom, that I felt at least initially it was going to be kind of a Billy Turner scenario from week two where Jones would be active because frankly, they needed a running back just in case and they would kind of manage his reps. Well, that didn't happen. I mean, he started, it makes sense. Like if he's going to dress, you're not going to start Aaron Jones.
Yeah.
He looked like he had a burst. He looked fast.
He ran violently.
And he really made an impact at the start of the game.
Yeah, he was, man, he was throwing his body against guys and driving guys backwards. I thought he must have had really fresh legs. You know, I think that was probably what was going on, but he looked really good.
And you know, a big part of that first drive that helped set up a long touchdown pass to Davante Adams. not quite as effective as the game went on. I thought, San Francisco was able to bottle him up, especially I don't know. We'll have to look to see if Fred Warner shadowed Aaron Jones, but Fred Warner definitely, you saw him for, tackles of 0 yards or negative yards on Aaron Jones sort of after that initial impact. But Jones ended up playing maybe more than he wanted, Tom. But Dexter Williams, it got 2 carries and then hurt a knee and could not finish the game.
Yeah, yeah. And you got to give Tyler Irvin some credit. He ran hard and, he's not a big back and he's not going to be able to run between the tackles real effectively, but he gave them something. And I mean, I think his longest run was 8 yards. So, but they got that out of him and then they got 4 catches for 48 yards out of him and at least one key first down. So he had a probably his most impactful game, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to think of – you'd have to go back to week one, Tom. He kind of got lost in the shuffle there in Minnesota with all the huge numbers. But that was – I think he had 3 carries for 40 yards, set up a couple scores. And that was really – you saw a lot of those jet motions, orbit motions that kind of pulled some looks away. And you had Davante Adams kind of by himself. And I thought – you're right. 8 carries for 24 yards, 3 yards a pop. That's not Tyler Irvin's bag, but he kind of had to take it. And let's not forget, he is just now 2 weeks back from a wrist injury that had him down for a while. He still was not really returning kicks on Thursday night. And yeah, Tom, it's funny. We had talked about, they never really throw it to him out of those motions. They tried against Minnesota. It didn't work. They managed one. Off to the side, it was a great play. He was wide open and also out of a bunch formation coming across the field. So, again, the more things he put on tape, looking for playmakers, if you will, Tyler Irvin probably had his best day, as you said, in that regard, catching the ball at least.
Yeah. Yep. He gave them something. And, at some point they got to hand the ball off to him or that jet motion stuff's not going to work anymore. I'm surprised they haven't given it to him more.
Yeah. I wonder if that's an RPO type of deal with the quarterback. I don't know.
I think it is, but at some point you just got to give it to him. Just call a play that gives it to him. I don't know. I just kind of feel like if you keep doing that, teams are not going to honor it anymore.
Yeah. And who knows? Maybe that's the thing. You cry wolf so many times through 12 games and then you pop one, against the Bears when it matters, right? So the Packers, Tim Boyle, he really tried to get 1 yard on his kneel down, Tom. They still gave him a negative, but John Lovett, a couple carries. You include the Rodgers scramble for a first down in this. They ran it 31 times for 111 yards, only 3.6 per carry. But again, if you can – take the two quarterback scrambles out, you're handing it off 29 times for 100 yards. That's when they lose, they get away from that. When they look, 29 handoffs, 31 pass attempts. And it's not shocking to see Aaron Rodgers. I mean, I guess 80% completion is a little obscene even for him. But he had a good day and Davante Adams, yet again, Tom, 10 catches, 173 and a score. Huge chunk plays. I just wonder, Tom, is he at a point, what do you do with him? I mean, can teams really replicate what Minnesota did? What was Minnesota doing in this last game, or Tampa doing things that were just so different up front that allowed the back end to work? Like, why do you think we've seen him kind of be contained, and then yet he could come off and go have huge numbers like this?
Well, he is so much better when Aaron Jones is around. I think everybody's better when Aaron Jones is around. Houston, they were just bad. And for some reason, they decided they were going to try to play man-to-man coverage against him and not give a lot of safety help. And that was the dumbest strategy ever. Minnesota didn't worry about the run game because Aaron Jones wasn't around. So they doubled Adams. And, you know, he scored three touchdowns. He was really good in the red zone where it's harder to double him. But the key is going to be Aaron Jones. So what are teams going to do? Are they going to double him and maybe give up some run defense, or are they going to be all over Jones and just try to double Adams whenever they can? You can't do it every down. And then the other part has to be, you have to get that contribution from Marquez Valdez-Scantling. And that was so key that because they weren't getting anything to the tight ends. The tight ends were a non-factor. And then it was like they were just waiting for someone else other than Adams and Jones. And Valdez-Scantling finally came through for him.
Yeah, and two touchdowns for Valdez-Scantling. But, of course, the big play was the 52-yarder. It wasn't the Robert Saleh probably tried something there with a safety who hasn't really been playing, or if he has, wasn't capable to, trying to fool Rodgers in disguise. I mean, I thought Fox Tom did a good job of breaking down Troy Aikman did in terms of what happened there with Valdez-Scantling up the middle, on a post route after a drop that, was bad. Quarterback seemed a little less than enthused about it, but, went back to him and a scramble drill touchdown, which clearly the two were on the same page there. But that's kind of, we've talked about this a lot, Tom. I mean, the team did not make a move at the trade deadline, which we're not surprised about. Mm-hmm. Isn't the one catch for 50 yards and a score kind of the job of Marquez Valdez-Scantling, or the four catches for 60 yards, where it's not going to really pop to you sometimes, but it's just so necessary in the grand scheme of the offense?
Yeah, that's what they've got to get. If they could get, it doesn't even have to be that many yards, but if he can get one or two plays that make a little bit of a difference, then, man, that's huge. Because they just seem to have so much more when he can spread the field a little bit. I mean, we saw it against Minnesota in the season opener, and then I don't know if we've seen it since then. But you need one more element. It doesn't have to be 10 catches for, 170 yards like Adams, but you've got to get those type of games, the four catches, 60 yards and a touchdown or something like that, because you got to be diversified.
Yeah. And it's, in terms of today, I mean, Aaron Jones, not very explosive in the pass game. We said Fred Warner kind of limited that, but he did catch the ball five times. Tyler Irvin, four catches. And you're right, Tom, kind of interesting. Robert Tonyan, one catch for 5 yards. Mercedes Lewis, one for one with a touchdown on a well-designed goal line play. Jay Sternberger, one catch for 1 yard, and not quite what we've come to see from the Packers tight ends, but Valdez-Scantling and Tyler Irvin did just enough, outside of Adams. It is interesting. I mean, he's missed a few games, but his on pace, maybe he'll get to his 1,000 yards, Tom.
I'm sure he's on pace for it, but injuries have just left him short every time he gets close.
I know. Isn't it amazing? I know his profile. I mean, it's big, I think, in context of Packers fandom. He's a three-time Pro Bowler, but I think around the league, Tom, I mean, he's had 100 catches once, 1,000 yards once. I mean, he's a touchdown machine, but it's just kind of interesting. I'm curious to see how this goes now for Davante Adams, sort of on a larger level. Yeah. And again, Now with Alan Lazard, probably no. Alan Lazard has to come back by Jacksonville, I believe, with the rule.
Is that by then? I was trying to remember that in the blog because he came back on a Wednesday, so wouldn't he have until after the Jacksonville game? I can't.
It's 21 days beginning that first day. So yeah, as we record this, it's pretty early in the morning, so I don't recall if it's the 28th. That he came back?
He came back on the 28th, yes. So, yeah, he should have Vikings 49. I think he can come back after.
He can, yeah. If now that we're doing the math here, 7 days is the 4th, 14 days is the 11th, and 21 is the 18th. Yeah. That also goes with Christian Kirksey as well.
Right.
So they do have, and that makes sense for that Wednesday because it gives them that extra cushion should they need it, you know, health-wise. And I feel that's a good transition, Tom, because, you know, again, we did not get to a podcast. Trade deadline came and went. You know, we had reported that they talked to Dante Pettis or to the 49ers about Dante Pettis, didn't make a move. ESPN says they called Antonio Brown's camp at some juncture to gauge his interest. Obviously that didn't happen. And then through multiple reports, you know, Will Fuller was the conversation. You know, Goody wasn't going to move off of 4. Texans are like, well, we're going to get a 3 and a comp pick, so we need more than that. And it just wasn't going to happen. Just your thoughts on, you know, the expected, I guess. And what do you think that means, I guess, going forward, you know, down the line here?
Well, you know, it's not surprising that they wouldn't give a 2. And I don't have a problem with that. I think that's just too much for a rent a player. So I just, from that standpoint, if they, as long as they feel like they went after it, I just don't know how close they got. I think I saw one report said they offered a 4th. You know, I don't, there's no guarantee that you would have him next year. So I guess I'm okay with that move. That non-move. The thing is, you know, they didn't really do anything. And so now they got who they got. And I don't know if that's going to be enough. I know one thing, they have a lot of depth. And I think they could win a season of attrition if other teams like the 49ers start getting all these injuries. I think they're a team that has depth at certain places where they wouldn't be devastated. So I think they have that going for them. I just don't know if they have enough special guys to be a Super Bowl team.
And maybe, and I'm wondering, Tom, if this didn't happen to Dylan and Williams, that I'm convinced Aaron Jones wouldn't have played. To your point though, of the special guys they have, they need to make sure they are healthy, you know, yeah. And Davante Adams and Aaron Jones, you know, because that changes everything. Alan Lazard had a great game against the Saints. He's a guy, you know, and he fits the offense and it works. But to your point, I'm fascinated by this type of thing, Tom. I'm one of those guys who thinks, I think we were on our group text and I don't know. There's sometimes I think teams kind of really hold on to picks, you know, when sometimes you should just kind of do it, you know, I mean, I get it. A second rounder for a rental is a big deal, but I guess I'd rather go with what you know. And as you always say though, in terms of the cap and free agency, you just deal with it when you get there. And I don't think it would have been a bad thing for Brian Gutekunst to say, well, who do we pay? Is it Will Fuller, Aaron Jones, Bakhtiari? I mean, those are all better problems to have than, you know, hoping that you don't take a, Josh Jones or a Josh Jackson or a Jason Spriggs or a Quentin Rowell. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at. I think if you can win a Super Bowl, you should try to win it, you know, for one pick in one year.
Well, you're assuming that Will Fuller is going to be the difference in winning a Super Bowl. And I'm not sure that that's the case.
Clearly Goody didn't think so either.
Good.
Right. I mean, Goody didn't think so either, right? I mean, I think if he could have got Julio Jones for a two, maybe that's different.
Yeah. Yeah,
right. I mean, I guess to me, it's, I don't know. And maybe that is the difference. I don't know. Maybe they get to an NFC title game again and only score 7 points.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. It's, we'll find out. Whether he should have pulled it, I don't know. But I do know that nobody else was willing to give a second.
Right.
For Will Fuller, and that kind of tells you that's probably a high price.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, for sure. It's not in a vacuum. I'm not playing fantasy football here. There's salary implications. I get that kind of stuff. I guess to me, I mean, aside from Pettis, who was released by the 49ers, but the Giants claimed, that's the other issue here now. I mean, at this point, they're going to end up with guys like Seth Roberts.
Yeah, yeah. They're not getting anybody that's going to be of any substance at this point. They got who they got. It's possible someone could get cut at some point, some team that decides they're going to clean house or whatever. But, there's no savior coming. That's for sure.
Yeah. And just finally here, as we wrap this game up, 34 to, I don't even know what the, whatever it was. What was the score? 34-17. Ultimately forgettable. And I guess so along those lines, hey, 6-2, they keep pace in the NFC. You know, Seattle is 6-1. Tampa 6-2. They do not have a tiebreaker, obviously, there. And it stays one step ahead of the Chicago Bears. So a win's a win, right, Tom? I mean, and then you get a mini bye and a chance to get healthy before, getting to the meat of mid-November and December football.
Yeah. Yeah. They get a nice, another gimme at home against Jacksonville next week. And then it gets a little tougher. And so, I'm sure they're thrilled with getting through this Thursday with a win. They just would be mistaken to make it more than what it was, which was beaten up on a injury riddled team.
Right. And you know, it does get a sour taste from 4 or 5 days before out of their mouths for sure. So we will be back on our regular schedule for the Green 19 podcast. As we get to next Thursday before the Jacksonville Jaguars head to Lambeau Field. And then hopefully, Tom, we'll be on the road again with trips to Indianapolis, Detroit, Chicago over the final month and a half of the regular season. So be sure to subscribe to PackersNews.com, download the app, turn on the notifications to get all this good stuff. And then if you're in Wisconsin and you want to know more about the state, local news, Bucks, Brewers, of course, the Packers, jsonline.com/deals. There's always something good there. And you'll read everything from Tom, myself, see all the videos from Olivia Reiner, read Pete Doherty and Ryan Wood as well. So we look forward to catching up with you next week. So for Tom, I am Jim. We will talk to you then.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.